Welcome to New Realities. This is Alan Steinfeld, and this program is about our evolution, the evolution of consciousness, of spirit, of this awakening culture that we're becoming a part of, that we're moving forward into a future that hopefully will have the coherency that we need to evolve as spiritually based beings. And that's why I'm talking tonight to Caroline Corey, who this will be the second part of the interview that I'm doing with Caroline about the nature of the grid of the planet. If you want to hear part one, you can go to the archives at BBS Radio, or you can go to my YouTube channel, New Realities, youtube.com/New Realities. That's part one. So we're going to be picking up where we left off, but it'll be pretty complete as it is. I also want to say that Carolyn is going to be premiering her beautiful new movie about ET consciousness at Contact in the Desert this coming week, May 19th, 2017. Gods Among Us. You can look for it at godsamongus.com, but it'll be Friday night at Contact in the Desert. So hope to see everyone there. Look at contactinthedesert.com. Love to see everyone there for the whole weekend. Anyway, Caroline, thank you for being here.
Oh, thanks for inviting me. Great intro.
Well, I know it's been a long day. It seems like things are just accelerating. It's like I did about 5 different events today, you know?
Wow. Same here. I'm like running around and things are just manifesting right and left. Amazing things just so fast. So I agree with you there.
Anything you want to share that's amazing you want to?
Just a lot of opportunities. People just showing up out of nowhere, inviting me to be part of their events or speaking, or wondering about the film. And so it's like I feel like I'm a magnet, just like attracting all these things at super speed, supersonic speed. So it's a lot of fun.
Well, it's great. You're also going to be showing the film, I know, at the Philip K. Dick Film Festival in New York City on May 28th. Sorry, I can't be there. I'll just be in Sedona at that point. So, but I know it's going to be a great showing. I mean, who's on your panel? Who did you get?
Of course. They wanted you to facilitate the hosting, actually. Too bad you can't be there. So I have on the panel one of the scientists, the astrophysicist from Harvard, who was in the film. So he's going to come from Boston and be on the panel with me. And there are a couple of experiencers as well. One is from the film and one is local. So it's going to be quite exciting, I think, because of the topic in the film, because it's about science, So it's going to be exciting to have the science and the experiential at the same time.
Yeah, no, I think it's a great film. It really captures the consciousness of this contact situation we're moving into. I mean, I love Rebecca Hardcastle, who's created the word exoconsciousness, and lots of people in the film. Also, just one side question. Did you hear about the Stephen Greer film?
I went to the premiere. I went to see it because this is a small world, but my film is now being picked up by distributors and different people are kind of worked with Steven about, on his previous film. And I just wanted to see the type of event they put together for that opening and how it was different than last year. So it was more from that perspective, but also to see what he was up to. So I did see the opening. It was very spectacular, very big theater. So they did very well there. The film itself, is I don't think that's what you're asking me, right?
No. Well, I wanted to know what you thought of the film. Some people seem to really like it. But it was a huge opening, wasn't it, Pat?
Yeah, that's why. Yeah, it was very huge and I think very well organized. So it looked great. So they really did a great job. I think, you know, it was a massive theater. I want to say, for those who know, it is the Regal Live downtown. And I think it holds like 1,200 seats or something. And it was about, wow. I think, I want to say about three quarter full, which is a lot. I mean, it's a lot.
There may have been like 800 people there, you're saying?
Yeah, I would say at least. And don't forget, this is a documentary. I mean, this is not a film that usually premieres in movie theaters. Usually documentaries, unless you're Michael Moore, you know what I mean? They go directly to, video platforms or video on demand or things like that, which is great as well. But it's usually theatrical. Even if you do a premiere, it's usually smaller, more. And then if you did theatrical release, it's usually limited just because documentaries are not that, I mean, that's not the platforms for it. So considering all this, it's amazing. It shows how much support he's got. So,
well, not just how much support he got, but I think it's great for the whole movement to show how much support there is for this type of work. Really, it's about the bigger picture, don't you think?
Absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, all these UFO conferences as well, they're like packed with people. So as you well know, Contact in the Desert as well, it's like thousands of people. So yeah, like you said, I think people are, even though sometimes the information is repetitive, but like you said, is people are so wanting to know more and more and more and just hear it again, maybe. But there's a massive amount of movement.
No, I think
movement.
That's great. Yeah. Mm. It's a movement. It's surely a movement. And I think, Contact in the Desert coming up next week, we'll have about 3,000, maybe 4,000 people there. So people want to hear this stuff. It's, I think people are hungry for this type of alternative knowledge.
And, yeah, absolutely. Go ahead. Sorry.
Mm-hmm. No. And that's what's so exciting about your work, because, you know, you're saying something different. You're adding to the body of knowledge. You're just not repeating what everyone else has said. Yes, there's ETs, there's all this, but you're bringing your own insights, your own direct contact, and you're a teacher in a sense. That's what I like about what you're doing.
I feel that it's a completely different approach, because that's based on my personal experience. So, for example, for me, I didn't just all of a sudden see lights in the sky, for example. So my experience was not a UFO sighting. My experience was a direct contact with a non-physical entity when I was 5 years old. My experience was a direct way of communicating telepathically and understanding how telepathic communication works. So that's where I'm coming from. I'm coming from my own experience. I'm not a reporter, kind of from outside looking at this phenomenon. So because of that, because these events happened to me at a very young age, I started asking these questions at a very young age. Okay, so how does it work? How does it work? Right. You know, how is it possible that a five-year-old could communicate telepathically with this invisible entity? How is it possible that I could perceive the subtle energy, see those beings, and nobody else can? How is it possible that they could arrive, they could be floating in our space? And, you know, how does it work? So all of these questions started at such a young age because of my direct experience that it was natural for me, by the time I got to making a movie, it was more about the mechanics of it, the science of it. You know, we know they're here, we know there's UFOs, but how does it work? And so that's why the approach is completely different. I wanted to bring as much science as possible, and especially answer some questions, you know, that even people who've been following ufology for years and years and years are still asking the same questions, you know. So hopefully that's what I'm doing in this film.
No, I think you are doing something. I think you're doing something original because it's different because we're dealing with the consciousness of the people and the way the mind works in your film, God's Among Us. And so it's refreshing, it's fresh information, and it's inspiring too, you know, because I think everyone has a chance now, a potential to make contact. I think this is our evolution.
Exactly. And that has become my work. I realized that the bottom line is the fact that I was having these contact experiences and communicating telepathically or seeing the energy or understanding the structure of the universe or the fabric of space, so on and so forth, had to do with consciousness. So that became the basis of my work, which was teaching the experiential aspect of consciousness. How does consciousness, what is consciousness? How does it work? How does it relate? How does it enter a human body? How does it become a human body? How does it interact with physical space and so on and so forth? And if you understand that, then you realize that, you know, you can then, from that perspective, start to answer a lot of questions that have to do with other intelligent life, like the ETs and even technology and even the mechanics of the universe. That's why, you know, it's all based on my personal experiences. So yeah, I'm very, very happy how it came out because, like you said, it's a very different approach, and I'm hoping a lot of people will really get a lot of answers that they've been you know, talking about, asking about.
Right, and I think, you know, understanding the science of incarnation and understanding how this all functions, we're starting, and the work you're doing, we're starting to realize that we're not what people have told us we are. You know, we're, there's something much bigger going on here. That we're, there's more to us as being.
Yeah, right? Absolutely. And I think, you know, a lot of people by now, even mainstream, kind of gets the concept that, okay, we're not just our bodies. There's something that we call the soul. And so there's even in the mainstream world, there is that understanding. But when we are starting to demonstrate that scientifically and to show experiments that prove that, now it's starting to get exciting because we're not just talking about this kind of vague, you know, ideology or concept out there. This is now becoming real physics and real laboratory experiments proving that there's a consciousness that is non-visible that is interacting with something that's visible. So that's kind of, that's also, you know, what I've done in the film. And I think this is new territory, and it's just the beginning because I'm planning a series, Alan. You know, this opened up so many, you know, new storylines and future episodes for sure.
Yeah, no, it's very, very exciting, and I definitely want to be part of that series. So why don't we pick up where we left off when we're talking about the grid, because I have a lot of questions still about this whole idea about the Earth grid, the dismantling of the old grid that was not working or was sabotaged or jammed in a way, and this laying out of the new grid, and then also the connection to our brain. So first, how did you plot the real coordinates of the grid?
So what happened, it's actually basically a template. It's there's a template for all life forms. And so because, as I mentioned briefly, I could perceive subtle energy very clearly. It's kind of like X-ray vision, if you will. So I could see the difference, the structure of consciousness, which is not the same as the aura, which doesn't look the same as someone's emotion, which is not the same, which doesn't look the same as someone's thoughts, for example. These are all different wave patterns and geometric patterns that I could perceive and discern. And so because of that, eventually with time, of course, I'm fast forwarding here after all many, many years of working on it myself, I started to understand how this template fits within that template, and that template is coherent with that other template. You see what I mean? And so eventually I realized that there is mathematical coherence with between physical matter and consciousness and what we call spirit energy, what we call the soul, and all the way down to the structure of DNA and all the way up to the patterning and structuring of the universe. And so because this patterning, because I could see the subtle energy, like kind of like how it's put together, I could kind of focus on it as if I was zooming in, if you will, and I could see how that pattern had a particular geometry and how it kind of came together, how it kind of came about, if you will. And there's always in the middle a central, what I call zero point, which is like a gravitational point that pulls matter or form together. And so...
Wait, sorry. Don't go too fast. So you're saying you see the patterns, and there's always where these energy lines would cross, there's a vortex or a zero point, right?
Right. Mm-hmm. And at the center of this, yes, of one of the very, oops, sorry.
It's okay. Sounds like your dog.
Sorry.
Okay.
So at the center of the first template, if you will, the first structure is what I call that zero point. It's the gravitational point that's holding these patterns together. It's like pulling the matter together. It's holding it together. So I could see that there is a central point, if you will, this gravitational point at the center of the planet. So now we're talking about the planetary grid. So I'm going to talk about that because it's different mm-hmm. with other things. So then I could see.
Okay. Sorry. Are you just saying it's different mm-hmm. than other grids or other what?
No, it's just, I mean, I'm just focusing on the planetary grid right now. So I'm describing how, so I could see that if I started at the center, at the core of the planet, there is this gravitational point that's kind of pulling matter together, that's holding that geometry together, which is the planet itself, which is, you know,
the right at the center point of the planet, you're saying.
Right. And so it's holding the geometry of the physical planet, the material planet itself. It's holding it together. And at the same time, I realize that it doesn't stop there. This is kind of the matter that we see with our visual eyes. But then I realized that those patterns continued on. It's kind of like having your physical body, but beyond your physical body, there's an energy field. So you don't really see the energy field, or most people cannot see the energy field, but there is an energy field. So it's kind of like that. So I could see that the material aspect of the planet, but then the patterns, it's kind of like the quantum field of the planet continued on. And those patterns were geometric, yes, and they continued on to up to about 5 to 7,000 miles above the surface of the Earth. So I was like, okay, well, that's interesting. And so I realized that there is a correlation between the radius of the planet and how far up in space it went. Like, why was there something like an event horizon, if you will, at 7,000 miles? You know what I mean? Like, what happens after that. You see,
you say the planet, you say the planetary grid sort of in a way falls off or gets modified at 7,000 miles above the Earth.
Yeah. And so I realized that, of course, it continued, the pattern of the fabric of space beyond that continued, but it changes. It's kind of like becomes a multiple of, you know, the previous pattern. So what I'm saying is that it continues on to the rest of the galaxy, if you will. It continues on to the rest of the universe, but it kind of changed the configuration. It changed the formula. I don't know how to say, like, I don't know how to explain it. It's like every three layers of geometry is what I call one octave. So every three layers of geometry, starting at the center of the planet, you have that same template that gets multiplied, that gets bigger and bigger. It's like a Russian doll, if you will. And so one right. fitting within another with fitting within another. And so what happens is that once you get to the outer doll, so to speak, which is that boundary, which is the planetary grid, that next doll, let's say, is six times bigger. You see what I mean? Like, it's coherent up to that point, and then it's a multiple of six, and it's a multiple of 12. Does that make sense? So
yeah. So the smallest one is at the core of the Earth. Is this what you're saying?
Yes, exactly.
There's a like a zero point at the core of the Earth that's a octahedron, possibly.
The zero point is just empty space. It's actually empty
right.
space.
And it around has to
be, it. Yes. Yes. It's just a gravitational point, and then that's holding the first vector equilibrium type template structure. Oh, and then from there, it grows one other layer. I think we showed that in the preview, in part one, for those who want to go back and watch how we did that. Yeah.
No, go ahead. No, I'm just saying it's growing out from the center, but it also seemed like you were saying the grid is coming also from the outside towards the center as well, right?
Yeah, it doesn't come towards. It just what happens is that every planet has that sort of boundary in the case of planet Earth, like I said, there's a correlation. If you notice, the radius of the planet is about, I don't know, 3,700 miles, something like that. I don't know, but from the surface of the planet to the planetary grid is about double that. So there's a correlation, mathematical correlation. So if Mars or another planet is bigger, then that planetary grid, its planetary grid is going to be bigger. If it's a smaller planet, then obviously the planetary grid is going to be smaller. So
right.
It's kind of, again, for people to simplify this, you can think about it like the energy field, but actually it's the quantum field of the planet, like the energy field of your body. So it has a sort of event horizon, but it doesn't stop. It continues on, except that the math, it changes from that point on. This means that within this boundary, when you are inside this planetary grid, this grid system, you have the experience of being human. You have the experience of being inside this container, so to speak, this hologram, if you will. And in the same way, if you are on Mars, you would have that experience. If you're somewhere else, you'd have that experience. But all of the planets are also connected by even a larger cosmic grid. So what's interesting is that, I noticed that, and to me it made a lot of sense, but what I also realized is that patterning on the Earth was, when I looked at someone's brain patterns, I saw the exact same uh-huh. formula. There was like a central point, and from that point, there was this formula that came out of it that matched exactly point by point every zero point, if you will, that's within this hologram. So the geometry of the human brain is perfectly, is a miniature version of that planetary grid hologram.
You mean everybody's human brain, or some people more aligned? And of course, we have to talk about which grid, but talk about how the brain is aligned. I mean, how do you see that alignment in the brain? Where does that show up?
So again, that also happens because I could see the subtle energy. So I realized that when a person had all of their tiny zero points aligned with the zero points of the bigger hologram, which is the planetary grid, that's when you are actually functioning at full 100% capacity, brain, what we call 100% brain capacity. But obviously, you can look around and you realize that no one's functioning with 100% capacity. Everybody's using 10% or less sometimes. And that means that from physics or from mathematical point of view, the alignment of your brain pathways and opening or zero point are not aligned with the fabric of space around you, meaning the hologram of this planetary grid. And that makes sense. This means that parts of your brain are not tapping into the larger pathways that take you to the cosmic web, that take you to the universe. They're not being utilized. They're not, that's the meaning of them not being aligned. And so the idea is that, and the way I could see that very, very clearly is sometimes in some of the autistic children, I would look at their brain because their parents would be like, you know, my kid doesn't communicate and, you know, she's not able to understand certain things or what have you. So I would focus on the brain and see what's going on. And I could see that, some of the autistic children's brains, their zero point was not tapping into, they're not aligned with the Earth planetary grid, but they were going beyond. They're aligned with another grid system that was out there. That's why they could not communicate with other human or did not want to communicate with other human. And so what this means is that the human brain is supposed to be functioning and is supposed to remain coherent with this hologram that's all around us. That's what it means to be human and to master the human condition, because your human brain is now mastering your human body, but you're tapping into all areas, all pathways that lead you to the center of the universe. I mean, it goes beyond this planet, beyond this galaxy. And so then we are able to have a human experience, but at the same time, bring information and knowledge from all the way from the universe into this human form. Does that make sense?
Wait, it does make sense. I most of it does, but no. So how? Because you do a meditation where you're able to link people's brains to the grid to have them understand the full capacity of their total functionality. Can we do that? How do you do that?
Yeah, so I mean, that's why I created a very specific meditation, because I could see all these zero points. And then when you aligned a specific zero point in your brain with a specific zero point in the universe, or a specific zero point in your body to a specific zero point, instantly that person, or, you know, you feel that opening. You feel that pathway opening up. So that's why most of my meditations are based on zero point techniques of that alignment. And of course, the main alignment is there's three main, let's say, zero points in the body. And if you align one of them to the center of the planet and one of them to the center of the galaxy and the third one to the center of the universe, then you are totally matching, if you will, your human form, your human geometry to that cosmic web, the geometry of the entire universe. And we are supposed to be doing.
I'm just wondering where are the, I'm sorry. Finish what you were saying because it sounded good.
So the main zero point that aligns with the center of the planet is behind the navel. It's actually between the navel and the spine at that level. So there is a vortex point, if you will, an opening gravitational point that holds actually your physical form together. That one should be aligned with the center of the planet, the that is Earth, if you will. So aligning these two is now aligning your physical body with the physical aspect of the planet. Then there's a second zero point, which is right at the thymus gland, between the heart and the thymus gland. Now this one, there's different ways to align different things because some people cannot reach, certain ways. I mean, sometimes you have to do it gradually because these types of exercise aren't taught and nobody tells us about any of that stuff. So, but ultimately that zero point could be aligned with the center of the galaxy so that we know that there's a black hole, there's a center point at the center of the galaxy. So aligning that zero point with the center of the galaxy aligns your spirit energy, your soul identity, if you will, with the galactic consciousness. And then the zero point at the pineal gland, that's the one that aligns with the center of the universe. And again, there's no directional thing. It's not like up or right or left or north or south. It doesn't work this way because it's a hologram. So through your intent, you can just simply intend for that to happen. And this hologram, that alignment just happens spontaneously.
Right. Okay. So you do this all at once. So if I was to focus on the point between the navel and the spine, align that with the earth, focus on the point of the thymus gland, and then focus on the pineal, and line all those three up, would that activate a fuller brain capacity?
Yeah. Not only that, actually, you're pretty much aligning every cell in your body, meaning your entire human aspect with your universal consciousness. It's extremely powerful, but you don't just do it that way. I mean, we start with breathing and then we just quietly, we start to quiet the mind a little bit and, and then gradually you start to align one point and then another and then another. And so for people who are interested, I have a lot of those meditation free of charge actually on my YouTube channel. So they can go you try something like that. But it's extremely powerful. So like what you're saying, actually, I'm glad you just brought this up because if you're just sitting around, and just trying to align this and align that without really shifting your vibration and focusing and, do a little bit of preparation through breathing and intent and shifting your focus. And sometimes you have to release a little bit, like a few blocks that are in the way before you do that. You may not feel it right away. So the preparation is important. And so it's all part of the meditation, the guided meditations that are, in all my meditation, we start with that preparation, which is not that long. It's just like 5-10 minutes and then you get into it. And then you have this ecstatic experience because every cell in your body is now resonating with one point within the universe. And so, go ahead.
Yeah, no, I get that. But how did this originate? How did that point between your navel and your spine originally connect with the center of the earth, or is our whole physical being, the whole electromagnetic frequency, guided by the earth's zero point? Are we being structured by these types of levels, you know what I'm saying? Our physical body is laid out along those grids. So we're just really reconnecting to our original form in that sense.
Exactly. Well, what happens is that the human form is created according to the planet that it's going to inhabit. That's the way it works. So from the beginning, your template as a human body that's going to live on the Earth, occupy the space, has to fit the hologram, the geometric structure of the planet you're inhabiting. So every point within that physical template, which we call the human form, has to correspond very specifically to the planet that you're inhabiting, including its quantum field or its energy field, if you will. So you come in with a specific physical shape that is coherent and balanced and aligned with this planet. And what happens, of course, we're born on this planet. Everybody tells us right and left and do this and don't do that and don't talk to invisible things and whatever, whatever. And you never get to, from the beginning, get used to the idea of aligning your physical body to the physical consciousness of the planet you're inhabiting. When was the first time you heard anybody teach you this in school, right? And so because of that, we're 20 years old and 30 years old and 40 years, and we've never done that. It's like this new concept out of nowhere. So of course, the cells have not done that all this time. And all of a sudden, they have to re-educate themselves. You know what I mean? They have to kind of relearn how to do this, when in fact, it's the most organic thing that should be happening from the beginning that will allow us to be very present and connected to the Earth. Because if you're here on the Earth in a human body, it's for you to be on the Earth, to be focused on the Earth. But at the same time, always retrieving information, bringing cosmic knowledge through those pathways that should be opened up, that, you know what I mean? Like those alignment that should be happening and to that should remain open from the beginning and through your adult life. And so,
but what if we go to another planet? If we go to Mars or even a more distant planet, is it possible that we could exist there, but our grid would be distorted or disengaged?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a great question. Exactly, because your brain is so used to the human template. It's used to that geometry around your body, that whether you see it or not, it's there. So that hologram around you all of a sudden is different. So it's kind of, to simplify it, you can liken it to having jet lag. So if you travel from East Coast to West Coast, it's only 3 hours. I mean, you feel a bit off, but it's not that bad. But if you travel from New York to China, then your whole body is like, and it's exactly like that. So if you were to travel to a nearby planet, then, you know, your consciousness would be off, slightly off or what have you. But if you traveled from here to a faraway galaxy, then your whole consciousness is completely off. In fact, that is the reason why most people who show up on the Earth, who come from very far away, they cannot simply just plunge into a human body, because their consciousness, the construct, the mechanics, everything is so different that usually you come from, let's say you come from Andromeda. So your consciousness is configured with that particular geometry, that pattern, those frequencies, those alignments, whatever. And then even if you're traveling as consciousness without a human body, you still, and then you arrive to the Milky Way, well, that's a whole different thing. So usually you don't just pop, you know, just hop from one place to another. You stay in one area for a while and you hang out there for a while. And then from that point, that's why the Pleiades, for example, is a very interesting point because it's right near, it's the close to the Milky Way galaxy. And you're going to have, and it's kind of a hub because it's kind of a stopover from many different galaxies, people, beings coming from all sorts of different galaxies and even far away from the universe, who stop there for a while to kind of get used to or reconfigure their consciousness patterning to this galaxy. So the Pleiades is a big hub. And then the next hub that is closer to the Earth is Sirius. There's also Arcturus, but it's mostly Sirius. Sirius is a very close by. I mean, there are other stars and planets as well, but for some reason, beings who come from very far away, they stop at Pleiades for a while, then they stop at Sirius, and they hang out there for a while and reconfigure their consciousness, the repatterning, and then eventually make it down to the Earth. So that's the reason why, because you are it's all mathematics. You're having to break down and recalculate your configuration to become coherent with this new formula, this new hologram that is the Earth.
On a soul level, you have to kind of resize our soul or reconfigure the soul because the soul is going to incarnate, but yet it needs to be at the frequency where it can take up a human type dimensional beingness, right?
Is this exactly? And in fact, if you were on the Earth, on the Moon, for example, or on Mars or something like that, for example, one of the things that you can do is, you know, register some of the Earth frequencies in different ways and kind of take them with you. It's again, it's like a jet lag. So if you take some, like you take your pillow or you take familiar things that that's a kind of an extension to your frequency, and then that helps you kind of readjust to that new location. So, and every time you are reconfiguring, you are recalculating that configuration to fit within this geometry. But in terms of the soul, it's more of a story that changes. It's more of the nature of why you are coming that needs to be readjusted every time, which has to do more with the purpose and has to do more with, your incarnation cycle, what you're here to accomplish. That's at a soul level. But on a physical and consciousness level, it's all mathematics that you are reconfiguring that math to fit within the grid system. Make sense? Are you there? I guess I'll keep talking.
Sorry. Got you. I'm back. No, it was off. But I'm sorry. I'm saying the thing that makes sense to me or that triggers for me is that when we are in the presence of some of these ET beings, our brain and thought forms are distorted because we are then sort of maybe in a way overpowered by their cosmic grid connection, which is distorting our field. Do you find that to be true?
Yeah, and also and also what happens is that when you become more evolved, so what does it mean to be evolved? What happens is that you kind of learn to have a mastery of being of managing your consciousness to control, if you will, but not in a negative way, meaning be in control, let's say, of your human aspect, but then switch to another set of frequencies, is a much, much higher frequency, without losing your human connection or your human frequency range. So that's what I call, mastering the human mind, meaning you are tuned into a frequency range, like an AM channel. Okay, so all the AM channel, everybody's tuned into AM channel. Everybody's hearing all the radio stations on the AM channels. Perfect. But then here comes an ET and he's vibrating or he's talking to you on an FM channel. Well, you're not going to hear or understand what he's saying, but you're trying to listen to the AM channel. And here's somebody bombarding you with FM channel. So it not only is it distracting, but there's no resonance, like there's no connection because these are completely different frequencies. So what usually happens, because they're more evolved or whatever, or at least they've learned how to do it, they will switch from FM to AM to try to communicate with you or, try to send you some sort of download or some sort of information. But the idea is ultimately for you to recognize the difference and to be able to switch channels and to be able to access all of the channels that are available in the universe. And when you
Yes, I'm just saying most people don't even know they have a channel.
Exactly.
But when they do,
exactly. They're all stuck on the AM channel, and that's that.
Right. So, but when we do that, let's say we could do that, then what? When we do that, then what?
So what happens is that at one point you're starting to function at a universal level with full brain capacity, and now you're able to communicate with the local brain with other humans like you and I are talking. But at the same time, as I'm talking to you, let's say we're tuned into you and I with the English language, let's say we're using the AM channel, right? But the rest of my brain is now currently, as I'm speaking to you on the AM channel, the rest of my brain is tapped into all of the other channels. So that if you ask me a question, I can retrieve it from somewhere, from its original place within the universe, and translate it into an AM channel language that you and everybody else can understand. So the idea.
How did you get your brain to work that way?
That's the training. That's the point. So that you can do both. Because a lot of people also, I noticed, because I've been teaching for so long and so many people, there's also, believe it or not, a lot of people want to awaken and expand and this and that. But I noticed that while they say that, at the same time, there is a fear and a belief system that if you tune into these higher dimensions or higher realities, you're going to kind of not disappear from the earth, but kind of like be outside, like you can't focus on your 3D life. So this is a belief system that is just based in fear. You ultimately, as a human, you are meant to be able to do both so that you are very much grounded, very much present, very much here, anchored in 3D, but at the same time, your consciousness is totally expanded, totally speaking of pathways and alignment, in perfect alignment with the universal grid, so that you retrieve information from any point within the universe live, like as somebody's asking you a question or what have you. And so it's not done through memory. It's not, you're not retrieving it from something you've done.
Are you always hooked in? Is anyone on the planet always? I guess there are masters who are, right?
But that's the point of being hooked in. So it's not that you know everything about everything all at once. You retrieve the information as needed. So like I said, one part of your brain is focused locally, and the rest of the brain is always, always tapped into the entire universal consciousness. But guess what? Actually, everybody is, but the difference is, first of all, they're not aware that they are. And second, of course, the bigger problem is they don't know how to use it. They don't know how to switch back and forth. They don't know how the two are connected. They don't know how it's possible to, you know what I mean, to access that information while at the same time having a normal, you know, 3D logical conversation.
Does that mean?
Yeah.
Ways, right?
Sorry, you broke up. I didn't hear what you said.
He said, you're not the only person who knows this. There must be other people who know this in different, may call it something else. Have you found that?
I mean, I'm sure there's different types of masters or different, I'm sure. This is not a secret. This is, I think, in different kind of, different teachings or spiritual or teachings and awakening or what have you. Different people have different techniques, but ultimately it's the same goal. It's the goal is to be very much, because there's also people who have a belief system that you access the other dimension or the higher realities after you're done here. Well, then what's the point of being here? If you are here and totally, totally cut off from the universe, like it doesn't even make sense. It doesn't the fact that you're here in a human body, if you were to cut yourself off from where you came from, then that actually defeats the purpose of you being here, because part of being here is to bring that higher knowledge through, to bring that frequency through. So, you know, it's kind of, to simplify it, if I'm living in the United States, I have that frequency, I live that culture, what have you. If I transport and implant myself in China, then my energy field, my vibration, my frequency is going to unfold in that culture, if you will. And so, If I'm no longer in America, I'm holding that pattern, that, you know what I mean? That quantum signature is part of me. And now when I get myself into China, I am sharing my quantum signature with that Chinese frequency or whatever. I'm merged with it. And that's how I transfer it to them through this quantum field. And so in the same way, when we come from Andromeda, let's say, we are our consciousness, let's say we are from there, and we hold that quantum signature, that patterning, that DNA, let's say, and when we become human, we don't stop being Andromedans. We are Andromedan who are now appearing as a human. And so we are now implanting that Andromedan quantum signature or that frequency within the human body. So if we cut ourselves off from our original essence, then we're, you know what I mean? Then we're not bringing that consciousness through.
But before we were Andromedans, we were something else as well, right?
Of course. Yes. And that's the beauty of this, is that the more you awaken to your lineage, to when you start to understand, oh, wait a minute, I'm communicating with beings from Sirius or Arcturians or, you know, Andromedans. Does that mean that perhaps did I start my journey there, or am I from there? Is that my lineage, or is it just kind of the group of people that I just hung out with for a while that are trying to help me? Do I, that's the discovery, which is what I teach in my classes. You know, it's to awaken to your original lineage while you are here in human form. And when you awaken to the very first original lineage that you are, then you start to bring it through. Now you're living your real purpose. You are bringing that quantum signature to the human form, therefore to the human species, therefore evolving the human species in that way.
I mean, that's the first time I really understood why people want to know their star system. A lot of people say they're from the Pleiades, but I said, what's the difference? And now you've explained it in a way that's understandable.
I think we're here. Yeah. I think most people have that urge, but they don't really know why.
Right. So each of these stars, but is anyone from Earth or are we all from someplace else?
No, absolutely. So this is a kind of a very important question, because what happens is that, especially with Earth, something very unique happened on Earth, which is a lot of the beings kind of got trapped into a reincarnation cycle over and over and could not kind of escape back go back to their original lineage. And this had to do with the grid, because the grid, we briefly mentioned that it was distorted or dismantled. So it's kind of like the pathways were blocked. And so, let's say you're from Andromeda, you come in as a human, and now when you finish with your incarnation cycle, you're ready to go back. But what if you can't? So now you're stuck here and you're having to reincarnate over and over and over, or hang out on the Earth plane for thousands of years at a time. So that's the reason why. And you are creating another generation of humans, and then that generation is creating other generation. Well, those other generations are born here, are created here. So there are beings who originate here, who have been here and have not originated somewhere else. And there's that going on. But there's also a type of consciousness that invented, if you will, or manipulated a part of the human genes to create another type of human species that's also born, or let's say created here. So yes, to answer your question, not everybody is from Andromeda, for sure.
No, but a lot of people are from someplace else, and it's to bring that essence to humanity. But are there places, though, people who have come from other star systems come here then, and will they move on to someplace else then?
Exactly, especially now that the grid has been repaired and opened up and reconnected to the cosmic, to the larger cosmic grid. So a lot of these beings are leaving and reintegrating into other star systems and moving on. But unfortunately, because of what's happened on the Earth, because generation after generation of humans have been created here locally, now I want to say there's about two-thirds of the human population that is currently on the Earth that is from Earth, meaning that was created here or genetically engineered or one or the other that is very, very local. And it's only maybe a third that is originated somewhere else that is visiting the Earth and doing what they need to do and leaving again. So it's approximately in those proportions.
If you feel, I would say people listening, if they feel like they're probably from someplace else, they probably are, you know?
Absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, it's interesting because sometimes when you ask a question to some people and they'll say, oh my God, I can't wait to get out of here. And I'm so attracted and I'm always looking at the stars. That's because they are, because it is their home. Otherwise, they wouldn't kind of even think about it that way. And it's interesting because I remember a long time ago, I said that to a person, and then that person said, oh no, I love it here. I wish I would never leave. And I thought at the time it was very strange, because when you know you come from somewhere else, you know, then you kind of assume that that's a natural longing, you know, that everybody else feels the same way. So when somebody says, no, I want to stay here, then, you know, sure enough, you realize that that's because they are from here. And, you know, and they don't relate to what you're saying, you know.
Are they are they, but they're still evolving. Everybody incarnates for evolutionary reasons, you know, so they're still here to move on and give their soul the totality of experience, right? So,
Of course. Yeah, of course. It doesn't mean they don't have a purpose. It just means that they're not necessarily wanting to leave, or they're not attracted to some other star system. So the idea is to understand also why, you know, most people feel that they want to go back to the stars, go back to another, or they're connected with a particular type of being. Sometimes it's the Arcturian, sometimes it's the Sirius or whatever. And it's for that reason. Sometimes it's their own lineage. Sometimes it's those beings are helping them temporarily until they get to the next level of awakening, and then they'll move on to another group of beings. So don't assume that if you're communicating with Pleiadians, that's necessarily your lineage. It, like I said earlier, it's possibly because you've hung out there and you have a lot of friends there, you know, that know you. But that's the reason why you have this longing. But at the same time, know that, you know, the fact that you have to occupy this human form is to, again, bring that consciousness, your original consciousness, through to help repair this hologram down here. And it's, again, it's all math. It's all mathematics that your human shape is actually restructuring itself to be able to support the new human form, which is this current shape plus your original lineage. So that's why, yeah, go ahead.
No, I'm just going to say what comes up for me is that we're bringing these star system frequencies here to evolve the humans, even the people who have originated here on their soul level, right? So it's to uplift the totality of the incarnational experience here.
Yes, absolutely, exactly. And now this can be done, going back to the grid, this can be done more easily because that grid patterning that we talked about that is supposed to be a perfect match to the human brain, because it was dismantled and it was messed up and interfered with, now there's another grid system that's in place that is correct, that is whole and complete. So the idea is that to train your physical brain to match the new grid system so that you can reach that original star system that you're from much easier. So, and I think I have that meditation too on my website, I think. So people can, you know, experience that, because all of this can make a lot of sense to a lot of people. But when you start experiencing it, like feeling it in your body, and notice how your brain feels when you are aligned with the old grid that's dismantled, and how it feels when you align it with the new grid that opens you up, that opens your pathways.
Through the meditation, notice when you do the meditation. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, exactly. And that way you can train your brain to match that geometry of the grid system faster, the more you do that meditation. And the more you do that, the more you'll open up these pathways much faster, much better.
Which website is this on?
So this is all the consciousness work, and that is omniumuniverse.com, O-M-N-I-U-M, omniumuniverse.com. There's a lot of meditations and classes there, and a lot of free stuff on the YouTube, so the people can click on the YouTube link there and find those meditations. And for the film, because we talk about, you know, the grid. In fact, there is an amazing 3D animation of the planetary grid in the film. I was very excited to finally be able to do that. So we included that in the film, and you'll be able to see how the grid system actually explains how the UFOs appear all of a sudden in our airspace and disappear, how telepathic communication happens. All of this is, there's an animation in the film, and that people, if you, people want to go to the website, it is godsamongus.com, and they can go to the events page and they'll see where it's going to be screening. And hopefully, you know, they want to come and see the film.
Well, I think it will be great. You know, at Contact in the Desert, and also playing in New York City on May 28th. So, I mean, there's so much more to talk to you about. But we'll also do an evening at the Rama Institute in LA on May 17th, right? We're going to do that.
Yes.
A little roundtable discussion about cosmic consciousness and all that. Well, I just one more question about your mission here and the fact that, you know, you feel like you've sort of been sent here in a way to bring in this information. Would you say that?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, if I can summarize it in a way, I mean, I could say something like, I have full recollection of where I come from and what I'm here to do and what I'm supposed to do. So
where did you come? Where are you from?
he asks at the 11th hour. We're about to wrap up the interview, right? But no, actually it's actually from another universe, actually. But again, that's why I know, because I remember that you have to make stops. You can't, your the configuration of your consciousness has to break down and reconfigure itself to fit the geometry and the math of every structure of space and every part of space. So that's why everything I'm telling you, I've been telling you about is actually from experience and recollection, if you will, and, you know, knowing all of this from doing it myself.
you have to take the local.
Sorry?
You have to take the local. You can't take the express right here. You have to make stops along the way in order to adjust to the con- Well, what? One more. What about twin flames and souls that exist as parts of us in that sense? If they're not, can they be in different universes and different star systems as well?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's two different topics within one, because people talk about twin flames, but actually it's two different things. Sometimes a twin flame is actually a parallel aspect of your own consciousness, meaning the original configuration of your consciousness, again, to simplify it, is splitting in half. So if it's the exact same formula and you divide it in two, for example, one of you becomes a man, one of them becomes a woman or whatever, and then you find each other, you feel strongly about yourself because you are the same consciousness. So that's called parallel aspect from a consciousness point of view, but it feels like, you know, you're meant to be together and this and that. So there's that going on. But there's also another type of what people call twin flame, which is a different thing, where it's more of a soul agreement, let's say. So I have a different a consciousness configuration, and you have a different configuration of consciousness. So it's not the same configuration, but even before coming in, we say, you know what, I think we're going to both of us jump in, and then I'm going to find you, you're going to find me, and because we have to do this work together, bring the two configuration together and consciousness together, we're going to fall in love and blah, 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 and feel it. And so people feel very attracted and they think that they're supposed to be together, but that's different than being the same type of consciousness. And then
the third one, yes, is what?
And then there's a third category, which again, it could be kind of a combination of the two, where it's a spirit family, meaning I'm part, my my consciousness configuration is part of a larger similar configuration. And let's say you and I are part of a similar, bigger, again, let's call it spirit family. So when we create this story that we're going to come in together, and then we find each other on the earth, we are attracted to each other, and we think we're twin flames, but actually it's only because we are recognizing our signature, a quantum signature, meaning that we're the same, we're part of the same spirit family. So there's a little bit of confusion, because the humans, when they are attracted very strongly to each other, right away you think, oh, we're meant to be together. But why are you meant to be together? Are you meant to be together because that's the same consciousness configuration, or because you're, you know what I mean? So, or is it just right, because it's familiar, because you came from this same spirit lineage? So it's, but, you know what I mean? It's each time it's slightly different.
That aspect of your soul, the first one, also be on a different, incarnated on a different star system while we're here. Is that also possible?
Absolutely. So before, if you're from Andromeda, again, I don't know why we're picking on Andromeda, but let's say we're from there. Yeah, I don't know. No. But so let's say we're coming from far away and I want to come to Earth. And so I don't have to have to appear as one chunk of consciousness on in one body on the Earth. I can split myself in two or three or four, but let's say two for now. And one of me is going to stay at Sirius B and the other me is going to be on Earth. And I'm going to be talking to the aspect of me that's in Sirius B. And I'm going to think that I'm talking to a star being, or I'm going to think that, you know, the star being is my spirit guide, when actually I'm just talking to another aspect of myself.
I get it.
And sometimes there's two people on Earth as well.
All right. So, I mean, this is, it's all really interesting, and it's, you've really developed a science to this, and I'm glad, because not many people include the science of soul incarnation with ET understanding and consciousness. And I think you're and showing how it's really all one thing, science and math and consciousness and ET realities. They're all part of one big thing.
Exactly. And it is meant to be that way. I mean, it wouldn't make sense that here you have science and on the other side of the spectrum, you have spirituality. Like, it doesn't even make sense. There's oneness, there's coherence, you know, right, in consciousness and the universe, the cosmic intelligence, you know, it's always another aspect of the same thing.
Right. Well, it's very exciting. I'm happy you're doing the work and being such a pioneer and giving people new ideas, because we need new stories to change how we've been thinking.
And
thank you, Caroline. Well, I look forward to I'll see you in LA and I'll see you at Contact, and hope people will see this film, Gods Among Us, which is a really excellent movie. So everyone should come down to Contact in the Desert Friday to check out the world premiere. It will be the world premiere, won't it?
Yes, it will be. And those who are on the East Coast who can't make it can go to the New York screening. I hope to see them there as well.
That's Joshua on May 19th, and in New York City at the Philip K. Dick Festival on May 28th at the Soho House. But look up Philip K. Dick and you'll see the screenings of Caroline Corey's new film, one of a series. So I'm looking forward to participating in the other sections of the
definitely
film.
When I see you in LA, we'll start talking about it. Okay.
right. Well, thank you. I know you're probably tired. You've had an exhausting day, right?
Yeah, it's all the 3D experience. It's all good. But thanks so much for having me. You're awesome, and it's always a pleasure. Always a pleasure.
All right. And your website again is Omnium, OMNIUM.
Yeah, OmniumUniverse.com, correct.
All right. Well, we didn't take any phone calls, but that's okay. We cover a lot of information and, you know, next time we'll do more, okay?
Sounds great.
All right. Lots of love and see you soon.
Okay, sweetie. Thanks so much. Bye-bye.
Bye. This is Alan Steinfeld for New Realities. That was Carolyn Corey. Amazing new film about the awakening of consciousness as it pertains to ET consciousnesses, a different kind of coming together, different way to use our brain, really, called a film called Gods Among Us. So you can check that out, godsamongus.com. You can find me on YouTube at youtube.com/newrealities. I'll be speaking at Contact in the Desert in Joshua Tree, California, May 19th to the 22nd. Also emceeing some of the stages there. I'll also be speaking at the Cosmic Origins Conference in Sedona, Arizona, May 26th to the 28th. That'll be a really exciting coming together of people talking about ancient civilizations and this relationship to the stars. William Henry will be there, Robert Bovall, Robert Schock, Regina Meredith, lots of great people. So if you have any questions, email me at newrealities@earthlink.net. You can also check out part one of the Carolyn Corey interview on YouTube. Go to my YouTube channel, youtube.com/newrealities. Thank you for listening. Good night.